that issue after 2 o'clock this afternoon here on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire. But time now to introduce our first hour feature guest, who I'm very happy to say is Cherish Watton from Lucy Cavendish College, part of Cambridge University, of course. Good afternoon to you,
Good
Cherish.
Afternoon. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, you're very welcome. You won't thank me for this, but we were just mentioning it off air, and people will be thinking, Cherish, well, that's an interesting name. And I expected an American accent as soon as you walked in the room with a name like Cherish, but it's your mum's choice, is it?
So my mum watched Dallas, and one of the actresses in real life, her daughter was called Cherish. So mum really liked it, dad really liked it, so... Here I am now, it's
well,
Cherish.
There we go. Well, and we thank your mum and dad for for that being the case. Now, you are making sure then that the contribution, the invaluable contribution of who were known as Lang Girls is remembered. Well, first of all, for those most of our listeners know what we're talking about, who we're talking about when we discuss land girls, but who were the land girls?
So the land girls were the women who worked on the land during the Second World War as part of the Women's Land Army. So the Women's Land Army was a civilian organisation set up to replace the men who'd gone off to fight in the war. So the Women's Land Army was there in the First and the Second World War.
Funny that, because I always associate land girls, which is the sort of nickname that you know that they took on, as being associated with the Second World War. But were they just as invaluable in the First World War, or that was just the starting point?
The First World War Women's Land Army was more of a starting point, but saying that, it had 23,000 women working as part of it, which supplemented sort of the other women who were working on the land. And it was very important because it obviously set the foundations for the Second World War Women's Land Army. Mm. So the First World War Land Army was, you had women working in agriculture, in forage, and also in the forests, which was sort of setting the precedent then for the Second World War, where you had the Women's Timber Corps, who were set up in 1942 for women who worked in the forests.
And they were referred to as the Lumberjills.
The Lumberjills, yes.
Which is a wonderful expression.
The female equivalent of the lumberjack.
Yeah.
And the Lumberjills are not sort of remembered as much for what they've done. And I've really enjoyed researching some of their work as part of my dissertation in the third year at university here, and trying to find out a bit more about their experiences, the way they were remembered, and sort of their representation.
Now, I said to you, you know, a few weeks back when we were arranging this interview, I'd love to, when we talk about the Land Girls, focus on Cambridgeshire, particularly, mm-hmm. you know, with BBC Radio Cambridgeshire, mm-hmm. because I presumed there would be, when you talk about Land Girls, then that of the sort of wealth of information that's out there, Cambridgeshire would be a solid, hearty chunk because, you know, we're here in prime farming territory.
Yes.
But that's not the case.
There's not been a huge amount written on the Women's Land Army in the Cambridgeshire area. There's sort of little bits in books, but nothing that's really been brought together, as far as I'm aware of, sort of looking at Cambridgeshire. But that's sort of surprising because obviously at the end of the war, in Huntingdon, Cambridgeshire and Ely, they had 1,050 land girls working. So this is not an insignificant amount.
Mm. Is there not generally much written about the land girls, or not, you know, much as far as records go when it comes to the history of land girls, just full stop wherever you are in the country?
That's not quite true. There has certainly been a lot more written about the Women's Land Army over the last sort of couple of decades. Some of this is sort of a national perspective on the organisation, and some of it is focusing down into specific counties. So, for example, Stuart Antrobus, he's written quite a lot on the Bedfordshire Women's Land Army, and he's done amazing research in bringing together every single land girl who worked in Bedford, in the Bedfordshire area, into a book and an online register, which is amazing work, which we sort of, I really hope other people kind of follow that sort of work he's doing, because you get that really local perspective.
It would be lovely this afternoon if we are speaking to any land girls, former land girls, or anybody who has a bit of family, you know, history that they could share with us this afternoon. Cliff in Chatteris, good afternoon to you, Cliff. Before we even started this conversation, said my sister is 95 or 96. He said he's not quite a bit like Doris Day. Nobody's really 100% sure. And she was a Land Army girl as well. But how many would there have been? In the, you mentioned there was, what, 21,000?
23,000, yeah, in the First World War. And then in the Second World War, you had a peak of 80,000, but you had up to 200,000 women in the First and Second World War. So really sort of big numbers of women who replaced, obviously, the men who went to fight.
What I didn't really factor in as well, this is what's fascinating coming out of this conversation and doing a little bit of research as well, is I just kind of assumed it was the wives and the sisters and the female relatives of farmers already working in this part of the world who would then just naturally become land girls. But that wasn't the case.
No, that wasn't the case. And if anything, history is sort of forgotten some of the work of women who were on the farms for most of their lives, and we sort of shifted to focusing on these women who came from the towns or to sort of work in the land army. But no, the women who were already working on the farms couldn't join the women's land army. So land girls were those women who might have had some background in farming, but mostly came from towns and cities, which obviously brought with it sometimes a bit of a culture clash, because you have sort of the stereotyped sort of town woman of sort of painted nails, shorter hair, coming to the country, not really knowing what she was going to expect. You see these beautiful pictures of sort of land girls out in the fields with sort of looking after lambs. It's very lovely, very picturesque. And then when they come to the sort of the country, they realise actually they are going to have to muck down and do work. So there's a little bit of a culture clash sometimes where these women have been on like the land all their lives and then they meet these land girls who haven't. But obviously those kind of conflicts, although they were there, they did tend to break down, obviously, as people got to know each other. But certainly a very interesting experience.
But you'd have then these townies, for want of a better word, mm-hmm. you know, coming out to do some good old, you know, hard graft in the fields in yeah. Cambridgeshire, who wouldn't know one end of a cow from another.
Well, they might not know what a cow even was.
Really?
They might not have seen a cow in their lives. And then they'd have to be milking the cows. Some like drove tractors for the first time, and obviously some women had not ever driven before. So it was a whole load of new experiences, which the war brought on for them. And often many women afterwards were really proud, as they should be, for what they did for Britain.
So well, I'm not sure that's the right question, really. But the motivation, obviously, was doing their bit for the war effort. But what was, you know, if you're there in the city, you know, why go out to the country and do your bit that way?
There's sort of a whole host of reasons that women would join. Sometimes their friends would want to go as well. So it's kind of like, OK, we'll sign up together and be posted maybe together, or they might be split up in the end. Some women wanted independence. Some people have compared it to today, us going away to university. It's the first time to get away from home and to actually have your independence, and going to the country sounded like a good sort of idea for that. Some people were sort of taken in by the propaganda images. Others were really pulled in by the uniform, because women could wear trousers and this was really attractive to them. And some women blatantly write in their memoirs, yep, I joined up because of the uniform.
Really? So the appeal was greater than, say, working in a munitions factory?
Well, definitely, yes.
In the city?
Being out in the sort of the fresh open air and bringing with that all the health benefits that we would associate. Well, the reality, obviously, was a little bit different to what they expected.
Interesting. Stay with us. Cherish Watton from Lucy Cavendish College, who has set up a website as well to take down these memories, these stories, these anecdotes and this local history. And we'd love to hear from you this afternoon. If you could in turn help her, because you'd love to hear stories from Cambridgeshire this afternoon about land girls. It is 12:30. Let's have a look at the weather forecast for Cambridgeshire this afternoon. It was a beautiful start to the day, but it does look like cloud is rolling in across the county. And with that cloud, there will be some scattered showers this afternoon. Also, some pleasantly warm, sunny intervals in between, but that's going to be mainly towards St Ives, St Neots, Kimbolton, towards the west of Cambridgeshire. Highs of 16 Celsius, that's a mild 61 degrees Fahrenheit. And then a mainly dry start to this evening with variable cloud cover, but patchy rain is also expected later on in the night, with a brisk northeasterly wind making it feel quite chilly after dark. A low of 5 Celsius, that's 41 degrees Fahrenheit.
FM, online, on DAB. This is BBC Radio Cambridgeshire.
Mm-hmm. matter where you are, no matter how far, just call my name, I'll be there in a hurry. On that you can depend and never worry.
Diana Ross here on Lunchtime Live, BBC Radio Cambridgeshire. It's 26 minutes to one, where you choose the music between one and two. So let us know what you'd like to hear by texting 81333. Start your message CAM. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter by searching for Jeremy Salas, or phone Mr. Glenn on 03 459 25 2000. We're looking at the invaluable contribution to the war effort of the Land Girls, the Women's Land Army here in Cambridgeshire and across the country. Malk has been in touch on the text. He says, hello Jezza, we had a Land Army barracks 20 yards across the road from where I lived, and we also had a prisoner of war camp 200 yards just down the road as well, which I'm thinking is in Thorney. It may have been in another part of the world. But these women then, who came from the cities and the big towns, mm-hmm. they would have been put up in barracks just like the one Malk's talking about there, would they? Just near the fields?
Yeah, so sometimes you had women staying in hostels where they would live kind of in big groups of women all together, and sometimes they were billeted with individual families where it might just be one or two of them living in with a family. So it really did change the experience, I think, because obviously living in a hostel environment, there was a lot more sort of camaraderie between the women. They sort of had other activities going on. They might have a piano, they might have sort of events going on, whereas if you're in individual families, sometimes they got on really well and they became like second daughters, but other times it could be isolating for some women.
And how was life for them? It was hard work, presumably.
Yeah.
And it was long, you know, get up at crack of dawn, work most of the day, would you?
Yeah, I mean, it was getting up very early in the morning to milk the cows, and you might come in for some breakfast, and then you'd be going out sort of picking fruit, ploughing, threshing, harvesting, rat catching, lots of sort of different roles that women sort of undertook. And obviously not many of them had any experience of doing this. So one of the stories that land girls say is when they were trying to catch rats, they have to make sure that they had an elastic band around their trousers to make sure that none of the rats climbed upwards. So it was hard work. And as they kind of adapted, their bodies sort of adapted to what was expected of them. But in the first few weeks, I mean, some women came with training, and you were lucky if you got sort of 4 to 6 weeks training, and some of that took place in Cambridge. But others, they were just thrown in at the deep end, and you need to go and milk that cow.
And it seems ludicrous to even suggest this in this day and age, but there was some concern over whether women were able, physically able to do these duties.
Yes, there was concerns that women wouldn't be able to, their bodies wouldn't be able to actually undertake the work. And they're very hostile to the idea that women would be replacing men. And especially the National Farmers Union was very against it at the beginning of the war. But come the end of the war, they were actually very supportive in like persuading land girls to get more recognition for their work and to be treated better once the war ended. So there was a sort of a change in opinion because the women showed that they could undertake the work and do it as well or better than men.
And what happened when the men came back from the war, when it was over?
Well, some women went back to sort of what they were doing before the war. Some women settled down and became mothers, and some stayed on the land. And actually here in Cambridge, they had one of the training facilities for women who did want to carry on. They could undertake a 32-week course learning about further elements of farming. So then they could go off and continue being on the farms. Sometimes you'd have women marrying the farmers or the farmer's sons. Obviously, that meant that they would also be working on the farm.
Yeah, did that add to the? You mentioned there was friction then between the women who were already working, you know, on the farms with the land army girls then who came in from towns. There was that part of the the friction.
I think perhaps some of the local women might have been slightly jealous of the fact that these young sort of townies were coming in and getting the men's attention, and these other women had been there all their life and hadn't been able to maybe get the same level of attention. So, certainly a little bit of a culture clash. But I think once, obviously, both sides got to know each other, then things did begin to settle down. But you're inevitably going to have a little bit of friction.
And the contribution was invaluable. You know, an army walks on its stomach, doesn't it? If you're not providing the food, the supplies this end, then it's disaster the other end, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the war, 30%, we were 30% self-sufficient. By the end of the war, we were 70% self-sufficient. And obviously the land army played a really big part in making that a reality.
Wow. You've done some research into the situation here in Cambridgeshire, because as we discussed, there's very little that's sort of out there as far as the record of what happened with the land girls. What have you discovered, and who have you discovered?
So one of the first memoirs actually written by women of their experiences was by Enid Berend, who was writing in 1946. Before she came into the land army, she was an insurance clerk. So it really was quite a change in occupation. She sort of did a whole range of farm work, fruit picking, collecting eggs, hedging and ditching, which she said was one of her favourite occupations. And touching on the Twitter message earlier, she also worked with prisoners of war, which she seemed to get on quite well with. She was also chosen to be the representative for Huntingdon, Cambridge and Ely when the Women's Land Army was actually celebrating its fourth birthday. She went up to the palace and she met then Princesses Elizabeth and Margaret as part of the celebrations. And apparently this was the Princess Elizabeth. They met in Buckingham Palace, which was quite unusual because they wanted to show the land girls some of the state rooms. So, I mean, it really was quite a big thing for her to have been representing the whole county. And then after the war, she joined some of the editorial staff at the Dairy Farmer. She wrote up her experiences, and then she went on to work in the zoology department at the university, writing scientific papers. So really a fascinating life to read, and interesting that it was one of the first women who sort of wrote up her experiences.
You mentioned prisoners of war because, of course, my granddad used to tell us stories about the Italian prisoners of war who would be working in the fields, and they became good friends with the prisoners of war. And presumably the land girls would be working alongside them as well.
Again, there was another little bit of contention there because sometimes the prisoners of war are afforded slightly better conditions than land girls, especially traveling to work. They had to obviously be under kind of watch by guards. So their sort of transport to work was often a bit more luxurious than some of the land girls who were sort of out in all the elements. So Yes, sometimes relationships are really positive and sometimes not so positive, but certainly very interesting.
Cherish, grab those headphones, if you would pop those on your head, because we're going to have a chat with a land girl, Peggy, in Waterbeach. Good afternoon to you, Peggy.
Hello.
Wonderful to talk to you.
Isn't it? So, I'm still here.
Yeah, well, yes, and I'm very happy you are. And this is bringing back memories for you then, is it?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about your experience then, Peggy.
Well, I was from London. I joined the Land Army when I was living in London and was taken out to Wiltshire, you know, to work on the land.
Yeah.
Oh, and you couldn't see the end of the fields. It was so big.
And you're a city girl, and it was quite the culture shock for you, was it?
Yes, it was an awful shock, actually. I wished I'd never done it.
Oh, really? The whole time you were there or just initially?
Well, when I first got there, yes, I wasn't, you know, I couldn't settle at all. And we were all in billets there. We weren't in people's homes or farms. You know, we were in billets that were old army things.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as nice as I thought it would be. You know, it wasn't as... Well, I don't know what I was expecting, really, but no, it wasn't very good. And you never got paid for 6 weeks, so you couldn't even go outside and to a little shop and buy anything, because we never got any wages for the first 6 weeks.
And how hard was the work? Describe some of the work you were doing then, Peggy.
Oh, very hard. Yes, you were out on the fields from 7 in the morning, and you got back at 5 at tea time, and then you all had to chip in and make the dinner for the whole... There was about 80 girls of us, I think, and we had to just, you know, get our own meal at tea time, and we were all worn out by then.
Yeah, so early bed, because you were up early the next day.
Yes, we went off in very early in the morning in army lorries, the back of army lorries, to work.
Much time off? I mean, no such thing as a weekend, presumably, during the war?
Well, I don't ever remember getting any time off, actually. Mind you, it's a long time ago now.
Yeah. Did you ever get a chance to let your hair down at all?
No, not that I know of, no.
No?
We were in Wiltshire, you know, and it was a tiny little village there. So there was nothing there, you know, to entertain you.
And do you feel that your... I mean, we were just saying that the contribution that you made and others was invaluable to the success of the war effort. Did you feel that contribution was recognised? Did you feel that, you know, people appreciated what you did?
Well, I didn't at the time, but I hope people did, you know. But I never thought of it that way. Not at the time.
And what's your abiding memory of the whole time you were a land girl?
The whole time? Well, not very nice, because no. I've ended up with cancerous moles on my legs from all... It was the hottest summer when I joined in 47, the hottest summer we've ever had, and now I've been told that's what causes them.
Oh, from stripping down in the heat, working on the fields.
Yes, and so I'm left with those now.
Oh.
I'm having treatment at Addenbrookes.
Yeah. Oh well, bless you, Peggy. Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, for that sacrifice for helping us win the war.
You have to laugh.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd cry.
No. Well, you're still with us, Peggy.
<I am. Yes. laughs>
And thank you so much. A delight to talk to you this afternoon.
Oh, well, that's kind of you.
All the best. Peggy in Waterbeach, who was a land girl. So she was lured in by the posters,
yes.
Cherish, and the propaganda about this wonderful, idyllic country lifestyle. And it wasn't quite what she expected.
Not quite what she expected, no.
If you would like to... contribute to your website, because you've got a website up and running where you're after people's anecdotes like Peggy's. Where do people go, Cherish?
So if people go to www.womenslandarmy.co.uk, I'm trying to bring together a national register of all the land girls and lumberjills who worked in the First and the Second World War. So there's a link to a questionnaire on the front page of the website. So it'd be brilliant if you could fill them in, if you are a land girl or a lumberjill, or if family members know information.
So if you've got, if your mum and dad, say, passed you down their stories, you can go onto that website and fill it in.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm really keen. Any photos you have, we're just trying to really make sure that the work of the Women's Land Army and the Women's Timber Corps is remembered.
The website, I guess, address again?
Is womenslandarmy.co.uk.
Excellent stuff. Cherish Watson from Lucy Cavendish College in Cambridge. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It is 13 minutes to one.
BBC Radio Cambridgeshire.
And Justin has the latest on